This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
I'm David Remnick, and I'm here with my colleague, Andrew Marantz. Now, Andrew, you watch a lot of comedy. You recently wrote a profile of the comedian, the SNL comedian, Leslie Jones. And I hear a lot of conversation in the halls about all the hot buttons that keep getting pushed in comedy. Who decides where the line is, what the line is? It seems in motion all the time.
Yeah, and it's the job of comedians to push those boundaries. And then the question becomes, okay, what's too much? Two of the people that I often end up talking to about these things are Emily Nussbaum, who's the magazine's TV critic, and Gia Tolentino, who writes for the website. And Gia had just written this great piece about Amy Schumer. One of Amy Schumer's writers, Kurt Metzger, had come to the defense of another fellow comic who had been accused of rape. And in coming to his defense, Metzger had said a lot of really inflammatory things. And so we just wanted to talk about all the issues that were raised by that whole incident.
So Amy Schumer released a book called The Girl with the Lower Back Tattoo, and it was a book of comic essays. And the day it was released, she got in trouble with the internet for a writer of hers named Kurt Metzger. And an Upright Citizens Brigade Theater just banned a performer who had been accused of rape. And Kurt Metzger wrote a screed about basically mocking the women who had accused him, but not publicly, basically implying in very vehement terms that there was no reason to believe these women. And
this is him on his personal Facebook.
This is him on his personal Facebook. The show is not, the writer's room is not in session right now, but he has been a liability to Amy Schumer ever since 2013, which is when the rape joke discussion was still going strong after Daniel Tosh had gotten, he said, heckled by a girl in his audience who said that she didn't want him to keep talking about rape jokes. And he said, wouldn't it be funny if that girl got raped by like five guys right now? And then that started a thing. And Kurt Metzger had defended that at length.
I mean, this conversation and debate about humor about rape, about what's offensive, about what's anti-feminist, about what's feminist, about women comedians and lady comedy and the rise in comedy about sex and all that kind of thing seems to have exploded in the last 5 years. And a lot of that is not just because of Amy Schumer, who has this fantastic show that does a lot of jokes about sex, about rape, about women, about feminism, but this real explosion of bold female humor on these subjects. And the fact that a lot of these comedians, from Amy Schumer to Lena Dunham to Abby and Alana on Broad City, there's a bunch of different people. There's Ali Wong. There's who are all of the different people that are out there. I mean, it's real explosion of voices have also been claimed for people as role models and spokespeople for feminism. And I think that that tension between somebody as a public female comedian and somebody as a role model during a period when people are talking about rape as a political issue is what's created this huge charge.
It was easier back when it was kind of like you were on a stage or you were off a stage. And now Twitter is this kind of quasi stage.
It's a really good point.
Where some comedians only use Twitter as a joke workshopping tool. Other people, comedians or otherwise, use Twitter as a like, this is just my thought about this thing and it's in no way a joke. And then some people blend the two. sometimes someone like Sarah Silverman will be like, hey, I had a breakthrough in therapy today. And then other times she'll be like, why does my dog poop so weird? And like, it's like kind of a joke and kind of not. So you have multiple layers of like, okay, thing that is not a joke, thing that's just a guy at the bank yelling racist stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you have another layer that's like, okay, it's structured as a joke. It just doesn't function as a good joke.
Yeah, there's no joke at all.
And then there's this thing of like, it was structured as a joke. It was intended as a joke. It just sucks.
It's part of what is interesting about this clash is that during the time of the rise of feminist comedy and female comedy, which are not the same thing but are connected, there's also been this explosion of online anti-woman and right-wing politics that are presented as funny memes and jokes and Holocaust references that are actually supposed to be ironically funny and things like that. I think it's part of the reason that it makes it very hard to respond to this sort of trolling is that it's not really framed as any kind of serious argument. It's framed as something to demonstrate that you have no sense of humor, which is Trump's whole thing.
Totally. Like, what was the one that he said? Oh, Obama was the founder of ISIS. Oh, nobody gets sarcasm anymore.
Right.
And then they were like, oh, you're being sarcastic? And he was like, no, I wasn't. So, like, it just becomes this cover-up where you can just be like, oh, you don't get me. You, like, grow a thicker skin, get a sense of humor.
Also, can I just intervene for a second? I know there are going to be people listening who are like, what are you doing to jokes? This is a stupid way to respond to jokes.
Totally.
People shouldn't talk about whether jokes are offensive. I mean, there's a tension in it as well that's about the idea that people should simply absorb jokes and humor, and that humor is in a special category where you physically react to it by laughing or crying or losing control of your body, essentially, and it has to do with this primal thing that's almost musical between you and the comedian, and that then to take your politics and take apart the words and say, where's the power? Are they punching up? Are they punching down?
But I guess so. I know exactly what you're saying. And I also think that the reason to take them apart is to understand your animal musical response, right? Because when it's offensive, but you laugh, then it's a different joke than, you know, like, yeah. I think the point of picking apart a joke and ruining it, you know?
You know, one of my, I actually have this vivid memory of, this is a long time ago, going to a comedy club when I was in college. And it was in a largely all white club in rural Ohio, and this guy told a joke that was about black guys having big d-. And then he tells this joke. It gets a big laugh because it's a sexual joke. When you work blue, it gets a titillated laugh. People are on dates. And then he ends the joke by saying, you know, doing my part, just keeping the myth alive. Like, he basically did a bit that showed that he knew it was a racist joke about sexual myths about black men. And I remember being so disgusted because I was like, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
Like, you've made a choice to use the joke, and now you're trying to sound like a guy who was doing a meta joke, and that won't work. And it did make me very interested in that question of, like, what is the goal of what the comedian's trying to do
totally. In
getting people to respond?
So what happens in the world if you go to that comedy club, this guy tells a racist joke, everybody laughs, and then you go, that was weird, and you go home, and you don't think about it? Like, what is our defense of why we are deciding that something is or isn't okay to say?
I mean, to me, it's because I love comedy, and I want comedy to be penetrating and original and say things about the world. Like, people who believe comedy is great and can be this philosophical art form, I feel like that's part of the reason to talk about if you think it has such a big effect. I remember how excited I was when I first saw Sarah Silverman, because I felt like she was doing this thing of telling this kind of offensive joke that was so well crafted that it had all these multiple sides in terms of jokes that are offensive but make you laugh anyway. I remember her telling that joke where she was like, you know, when I was a teenager, I was raped by a doctor, which for a Jewish girl is a very bittersweet thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know people were offended just by the subject matter and by the idea that a Jewish girl being raped by a doctor would be, like, Jewish girls want to be with doctors. Like, when you take it apart, you understand what the joke is about.
Right.
But I also felt so personally thrilled watching the joke coming from her.
Well, and it's also, I mean, it's a distinct and very interesting case for the progressive but very effective female comedians, where the better their jokes, like, the more politically sharp their jokes are, the harder they'll be held accountable for everything associated with them that's not as good as their jokes politically.
Well, to me, a lot of this is a problem of female culture.
Yeah.
Like, there's a real desire
for
aspirational role models. I'm not saying that's not understandable.
But I don't find it understandable at all. I mean, I do, but not really.
I bridle at it a little bit because of the sort of go-girl, rah-rah dynamic.
It's a trap.
Which it is. It's a trap. It doesn't allow the comedians and the artists to simply be flawed, weird creators.
Yeah,
and it's part of
the
marketing.
If you write a memoir And the memoir is about how people can learn from your career. And then that the week your memoir comes out, you're called to account for creative decisions you made in your career, which include employing a guy who says stuff that's entirely counter to everything you've built your worldview on. Then you'll be called to account on it in a different way than if you hadn't written the memoir.
It's true. And on the Amy Schumer Show, some of my favorite skits are the ones that actually do have this meta quality about how self-abased female comedy can be. Yeah. Like, did you see the episode where she plays this? It's one of the first skits on the show. It's where she's auditioning to be in the Two Girls, One Cup video.
Yeah.
And the thing that's so great about it, it's absolutely disgusting. I refuse to describe what the Two Girls, One Cup video is, but it was a disgusting viral video.
I've never watched it.
I've never either.
We are unified.
Yeah.
In any case, it literally is a sketch about somebody who is about to appear in a disgusting scat porn video and just keeps trying to justify it as some kind of feminist experimental
art. Or the gangbang sponsored by Seabreeze
or
whatever.
The gangbang is another one. And one of the things that her show is best at is actually puncturing the delusional quality of certain kinds of female performances of freedom as actually incredibly self-abasing. And that's just a rare and original thing to do. And if she gave a speech saying it, it would really be kind of fine, but a little tedious. Part of what I feel a lot of these creators that we're talking about are trying to do is forge a new kind of female voice that actually talks about all of these questions, including rape stuff, and makes it part of the material instead of part of the target.
The New Yorker's Emily Nussbaum, along with her colleagues Gia Tolentino and Andrew Moranz. You can find some of their articles about comedy, about Amy Schumer, and a lot more at NewYorkerRadio.org.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI, to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.